Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Welcome to the show today. We have a lot of stuff planned. I'm excited to be back doing the live show. A couple things I have these. You can see I have the agenda right there. If you're listening to this as a podcast, awesome. Thanks for supporting the channel. Thanks for listening. This is intended as a video podcast live on YouTube. And I really encourage you to ask questions during the show. So in the comment section, if you want me to answer a question or have a comment, please do. It's really fun for me. That's what makes this really fun for me, is the back and forth I get to have. A couple things I want to start with is on Thursday, we're going to do an interview with Tim Palmer. And if you don't know who Tim Palmer is, he's written like 20 plus books on river conservation. I think he is the most prolific boater of all time. But people don't know about him because he's not boating class 5+. He's doing like a 7-day trip on the Yellowstone, or a 30-day trip on the Yellowstone, or a 7-day trip on a river in Oregon you've never heard of. He's not focused on the most beautiful and the hardest rivers. He's just focused on rivers and spending long amounts of time on them. Like, for example, he'll do the Salmon River. He'll start in Stanley, go all down through Salmon, do the main Salmon, and keep going down to the Snake. That's a river trip that Tim likes to do. And he loves to write about rivers. He's super involved in river conservation. All around great guy. One of my favorite people of all time. I'm not going to interview him. But Tate, who has a new show we've started called Safety First with Danger Tate, she's going to do the interview. I am not that good at interviews. Like, I've done a few. I don't like doing it. It gives me anxiety. And I watch my interviews and they're terrible. Tate's great at it. Tate is like super well-spoken and smart, and she likes doing it. She's more social. So she's doing it. And Courtney's saying, yeah, Anne's really cool too. Tate's going to do an interview with Anne separately. That's in the works. And Anne, large conservationist, also a writer. Yeah, super awesome. So with that, let's get started. We only have one question this week, so I'm going to get right to the question, then we'll get through the rest of our agenda. This is about rivergeek.com. Greetings from Spokane, Washington. Trying to find out if anyone knows about rivergeek.com website. That is a one-stop shop for river permit applications info. We've used it for years, and all of a sudden it's not working. Unfortunately, I don't know about it. And let's look for it, see what happens. I don't know. Let's do some searching. Rivergeek.com. Oh, yeah. The site cannot be reached. So let's I'm going to get rid of this. I'm going to stop sharing what I was going to share with you all and share this screen. So this is rivergeek.com. This is what happens when you go to rivergeek.com. So this is pretty common in the river website world. There's been so many websites. I mean, when I started kayaking in the 90s, there was kachunk.com, which was the most awesome kayaking site ever. It's gone. Another one that is like the California boating site, boof.com, took over. Let's see what's even there. Now it goes to a different website that's expired. Boof.com was full of amazing paddling photos about California. It became a discussion board for boating. It's gone. Same thing, Boater Talk. That's still a thing. I feel like Boater Talk went away. Yep, same thing. So the reality is people get excited about making websites for the boating community. It's something that when you're really into boating is really fun. Once you've stopped boating or you're kind of out of it, it's start to become the hassle because websites have to be updated. There's security issues. They hack sometimes. People email you with their special needs and expectations. And like maintaining websites for the boating public is it's a job. It's hard work. You know, one of my favorites of all times is dreamflows.com. This is in California, is the ultimate flow page. And it has the real-time report, which I mean, I check daily for probably 10 years of my life. You know, always looking for what was running. I mean, this was going through all these flows and seeing what to run in California. This is it. I care so much about it. Or even a sponsored link. You can see our logo there. You know, Chris, who does this, I'm not sure how much he still boats, but he still puts energy into this all the time. And, but, you know, six of us give him money every year to make it worth his time. Otherwise, like, it, there's no other way to really make money off these websites. It's very hard to, like, monetize it. So, you know, you're either doing it out of the kindness of your heart or hopefully making some money like Chris is through the advertisements. But it's there's not a lot of websites out there. I've created a website, Whitewater Guidebook, and this was originally CaliRiver.com, which is a site I worked on when I lived in California, which I turned it into Whitewater Guidebook. And we put a lot of energy into this, and I will continue to. This probably isn't going away. Another site I helped build, c-w-r.com. Bring that one up really quick. This is a site when I lived in California, I helped somebody build. And, you know, it's just old school. It hasn't been updated in forever. This one still does exist. But this was written in HTML code, so it's hard to hack. Where all the new websites done at WordPress or whatever are hackable. Like, they can get hacked and then people insert malicious code, and it's super messy, hard to keep up with this stuff. But if you want river permit information, which is really the gist of the question, I would just Google river permit blog. Let's see what comes up. Yeah, what I thought would come up. The Michael, who wrote a blog about the river permit lottery, made this page a few years ago. Or maybe he made it recently. Oh, maybe this is brand new. Oh, cool. Or newer. Wait, what's the date on this? January 24th, 2024. So a year ago, Michael wrote this. And it's on our Whitewater Guidebook website. It has, you know, the different lotteries, a nice video that I forgot to wear my private Whitewater hat on the show today. I'm sorry. Anyway, Private Whitewater has a video that I'm sure is great about permits. And Oregon permits, Utah permits. So this is probably your best bet for all the permit information in one place. So I would suggest going here if you're looking for permit information, or just you can go down to, you know, this other website, Riverbent, another great website, has a blog about different permits to apply for. So the answer to your question is River Geek is probably gone, unfortunately. Because these websites are a labor of love and hard to maintain, and that's just the reality. But there are other websites that have all this permit information all in one place, and Google is a great tool to find those things. So hopefully that helps you out. Okay, so that's the end of questions. Let's go to my next thing, which is recent accidents. I want to share this PDF. Oh, hold on. Let me go back. Let me share screen. For those of you watching this on YouTube, you understand I'm trying to manage my way through the internet here. Here we go. If you're listening to a podcast, I'm sorry. Okay, this is a list of recent accidents. Charlie Walbridge, who's the safety chair of American Whitewater, does his best to keep track of accidents, and he publishes them. And he posted this on Facebook. So a lot of you have probably seen this. And this is the accidents, it looks like, for the last 6 months, probably something like that, of 2024. And I just like to, on a semi-regular basis, look through these accidents and look at the causes. So we have a better understanding of what causes serious accidents and fatalities. And just to look through these really quick, recognize these wreck kayak ones. This is a wreck kayak. A lot of those are on like class. Oh, is this class three? Wow. But like, there's a lot of inner tube, wreck kayak, open canoe, SUP. I mean, that's not a tube. That's not our world that much. And that's just not the stuff I talk about when I'm on this channel, but I think it's worth paying attention to them. But I sometimes pull those out because those aren't the mistakes I feel like I'm as worried about. But obviously, like, if you look at them, these people in the James River, no PFD inexperience, no PFD experience, no PFD. There's a one boat trip. And if you go to the top, even actually, where's my cursor show up here? Yeah. So things we'll see over and over: solo paddling, high water, no PFD, no PFD, no PFD, one boat trip, same with solo paddling. Strainer, this one is a class 5 kayaker, a very good kayaker. If I remember right, he was on the board of directors of American Whitewater. Like this, these are the accidents we need to worry about, because this is the stuff that a lot of us are doing. And a lot of us are experienced, can have problems. It's a good reminder. One boat trip, hypothermia, flush drowning. Flush drowning, just as a reminder to everybody, just means they went downstream and they died. And we don't always know why they died. They could have had a heart attack. They could have drowned. They just went downstream and they drowned. And, and because they didn't live, we can't ask them what happened. And so flush drowning is this big like group of things that includes, we don't always know what happened. No PFD, no PFD, solo paddling, no PFD, no PFD, high water, equipment trap, one boat trip, no PFD, inadequate equipment, no PFD, failed rescue. And you can go on the website and read about these if you're curious. No PFD, no PFD, no PFD, high water, no PFD, strainer, cold water, strainer, flush drowning, high water. So we can look at the last few months of accidents and make some basic assumptions. We should probably wear a PFD. We probably shouldn't paddle by ourselves. Equipment traps and strainers kill people. High water and cold water are bad news. That seems to me like almost all of this. PFD, one boat trips, cold water, high water, and some strainers and some traps. The thing that's not on here is if people have been drinking. And maybe that's known but not wrote about in the report, but like alcohol and rivers are a bad mix. We know this. We don't talk about it enough. But I wonder if alcohol was a factor in any of these. I don't know. And maybe it's in the report if I read more in depth. I was talking to somebody today about a video I recently watched where an accident had occurred. And this person I talked to brought up the fact that maybe they were drunk. And once, I didn't think about that when I watched the video, but now I look back and I'm like, that would actually explain quite a few things that happened in the video. And so we know that drinking, it's not a good idea to drink and go in the water. I bet you some of these had drinking involved too, you know, especially the tubes, maybe the recreational kayaks, sometimes the whitewater. It's really hard to say. So it's good to bring these up. I want to, oh, there's a comment here from Mike. The Naomi Pomeroy, I don't know, Pomeroy incident on the Willamette. I don't know what that incident was. Got a lot of press in Portland, PDX. Supleash with no quick release, got caught in a strainer, and the crafts were tied together. Yeah, I mean, so on subs, we should have releasable waist releases, not ankle harnesses. And I mean, I think that boating education is super important, and we should be doing more boating education, I guess. Yeah, we should. My little corner of this is what I'm going to say is class 3 and higher whitewater. I'm going to say, like, I don't really accept that much anymore, but like I think I'm speaking to here are rafters, mainly cap boaters, maybe kayakers, maybe duckiers, probably not creature crafters because I don't know. There's not that many of them. Maybe pack rafters, but people doing class 3 and harder whitewater, somebody supping on the Willamette isn't going to watch my show, isn't going to listen to anything I listen to. It's hard to communicate with them. So I'm trying my best to communicate with people who are doing class 3 more difficult whitewater. How we communicate to somebody supping flat water, that's beyond me, which it's really unfortunate. Oh, Mike's saying it's one of the lines on the sheet. Oh, okay. Got it. Thanks for pointing that out. I just didn't notice. That is, where is it? Sup. Let's find it. Sup, strainer, inexperience. Wait, that's Bishop Romero, who's 11. Yikes. Where's the sup? I don't see it. Sup. Oh, no PFD, inadequate equipment. Oh, so inadequate equipment means that that is they should have had a waist belt strainer, not an ankle strainer. Yeah, and it says class. It says NA. It's like class zero. Or class. I mean, I'm surprised it says NA. It should be class one, but I'm sure it's class one if it had some current. But anyway, I feel like who I'm speaking to, what I'm speaking about, is class three more difficult whitewater. I feel like people on lakes and class one and in inner tubes, that I don't know how we communicate to them. That seems like it, there's boating groups that do that. Okay, so I want to remove that, and I want to bring up something else that I thought was really cool, and this is kind of leading into it. I got to open it up here. American Whitewater, which is a great organization, and we should all be members. If you're not a member, you suck. Go be a member. Like, stop watching my show and go become a member, because they do so much for us. They do a lot of river conservation work, a lot of safety work. They come up with that database. They advocate for access for us. A lot of the rivers we do, we can only do because AW did the hard work some number of years ago. They get dam releases. We really should all be members of American Whitewater. It's just a fact. So, and they did this. They created this graphic, which is beautiful. And it has the big four. And I think this is a really cool, it's simple, cool graphic that is going to, this is the low-hanging fruit. This is like, if we apply these things, it's going to help on a lot of incidents. And I like to call, I don't agree with what the big four are personally. I would, my big four would be a little different, but this is really close to my big four, what I think of the big four. And so I break it up into the big eight. I break up into four behavioral things, like things we choose to do, and four environmental things. But ignore mine. I think this is great. So number one is wear a PFD. Dress for the swim is encompasses more like maybe wear a wetsuit or a dry suit, depending on the weather. But like number one is wear a PFD. You, when you look at that list, it's pretty obvious. Like wearing a PFD, a lot of people that die are not wearing PFDs. Number two, boat with a team, which is a way nicer way than I say it. I say don't solo boat. I think I'm going to rewrite mine as boat with a team. If you looked at that list, there were a lot of people boating by themselves. If you have an accident and you only have one boat, then it's hard to recover accidents. Like, there's no safety net. There's nobody there to help you in the event that something happens. And so having other boaters, I think, is key. And this graphic shows one boat and a team of people, three people. But I'm going to say a team means more than one boat. So one boat with three people is more dangerous than one boat with one person. Because if that boat flips, you now have three victims and nobody to rescue. Right? If one person's in a boat and it flips, you have one victim. Right? So I would, hopefully this boat with three people in it has another boat that can help them. And you can see somebody fell out and somebody's pulling them in, but that doesn't, I'm not going to call three people in a boat. That's still solo boating. It's one boat, right? You want multiple boats. You want multiple people spread out in multiple boats that can help the rescues. Okay. Know before you go. Yeah. Research the river, avoid high water, dams, and trees. Yes. So high water, dams, and trees are all environmental things on my list. So I have a separate list of environmental things to avoid. And high water is one of them. Low head dams, another one. Strainers is another one. So yeah, and research the river. Yeah, like know where you're going. I'm a little confused how avoiding high water, dams, and trees fits in nowhere before you go. I guess the high water is because you can check the flow. Dams is because you can find out there's a dam there. Trees, I guess you could learn there's trees there. So that makes sense. Yeah, know that there's trees. Trees can pop up at any time though. So you got to be kind of aware of trees. They can fall over whenever you want. So yeah, I guess fitting under know before you go makes sense. And then sober is safer. Yeah, I mean, don't drink on boat, right? Like, not only is sober safer, we should be sober when we're on whitewater. It's, yeah. If you, again, if we look at the data, they don't really ever list have they been drinking as a factor. I don't think we ever find out if people have been drinking, but I think there's more accidents associated with drinking than we all know. That's just a guess of mine. So anyway, I really like this list. I think calling the big four, again, I would write it slightly differently, but you know, that's just nitpicking. I mean, super simple. Wear a PFD, don't solo boat, know about the river before you go, and don't drink. You do those four things, that list of fatalities is way, way shorter, right? This is the low-hanging fruit. You do these things, and you've drastically reduced, you've drastically increased your safety. You do these four things drastically. Like, actually, the more I think about this list, I like it more. This is like the riskiest stuff. Like, not wearing a PFD, not going by yourself, going on a river where there's unknowns, and being drinking. This is like, I would tell you, if we just did these four things, and these four things are not hard. This is not difficult. Put a PFD on, don't drink, have friends, and do some research. I bet we cut river fatalities in half, easy, with just these four things. So I'm super jazzed on this. Thank you, American Whitewater, for like putting this out, making it super easy to see and visually exciting. This is super cool. Okay. So that's the AW Big Four. And then finally, I want to talk about the Capto, because I put out a short video about this the other day. Where did I put that thing? I don't know. I lost it already. I was going to talk about it. Oh, here it is. Yeah, I keep losing things right in front of me. This is the CMC Capto. And I did a YouTube short with this the other day. And here's some rope I can maybe play with. I did a video, and this is a really cool device that I'm going to start experimenting with. And I put the video out, and there were just so many questions. And so I just want to answer them. There's not teeth in here. And can you see that? There's not teeth. And so it doesn't ruin your rope, where if you use something like a, I don't have one here, but some of those pencil devices that have teeth, they'll strip the sheath off if you pull really hard. This thing, when you put a rope in it, so let me put a rope in it really quick. So here it is, like this, if you can see. And I'm going to throw a rope in here really quick. It grabs the rope this way, but lets it flow this way. It acts like, so it stops it this way and goes through that way. And if you want to release it, you just pull that up and it goes both ways. It's so slick. So holding this up, it goes both ways. Once that's down, it grips it this way. If there were teeth on there and you pulled really hard, the teeth would strip the sheath on the rope, which ruins the rope, right? This thing's kind of cool, and I haven't done the test yet. I'm going to do the test next week, where I've heard that it's meant to slip at 6 kilonewtons. We're going to find out. I'll do the test, which is this is really cool if it does, because if you pull really hard, it's not going to strip the sheath. It's going to protect the rope. And if you are pulling too hard, it's a built-in fuse to your mechanical advantage system. I hope I'm making some sense here. I'm really excited about it. And sometimes I'm using terminology that is beyond what everybody understands. So hopefully I'm not doing that. Or I'm just like talking about crazy stuff and makes no sense. But the way this would work in mechanical advantage system is because it has a pulley as well. So you can run this rope out as a 3-to-1, put this in here, put this around an anchor. Did I do this the right way? And then if you pull, did I do it the right way? Maybe it's the other way around. But it basically grabs the rope, and it has a pulley in here as well. And so when you have your pulley prusik out on the rope on a 3-to-1, this thing can act as both, and it's easy to put on, it's easy to undo, and it won't strip your rope, and it might have a 6 kilonewton fuse, which will keep people from pulling too hard on their 3-to-1s. One of the problems with 3-to-1s is you set up, and next thing you know, you get like 10 people on it, and you pull too hard, and you beyond the breaking strength of things, things break, people get hurt. The downsides of this device, it's expensive. It's $370. It's so high quality though. It's sort of like a fidget spinner for me. It makes cool noises. You can hear all these noises. It's really well made. It's fun to play with. It's just a nice piece of, for those of you that like stuff, like gear, like metal things, it's really high quality. And this one only works on 10.5 and 11 meter ropes. I think they make another one for slightly different ropes. So this isn't something you're going to pull out and use with your throw bags. Like a Prusik, a lot of uses. If you have throw bags, put some together. This is if you have a 10.5, 11 mil rope in your safety kit, this would match with it and be used for this. And I would say this is, if this is a gear boat type thing, I wouldn't get one of these and be using it on like kayaking or pulling cat boats off or even like paddle boats. It might be overkill. This is for those of you that are like worried about burying gear boats that have like big 11 meter rope like this. And you just put it in the kit with this rope and it only gets used with this rope. Learning how to use it, it's easier to use than tying a Prusik for sure. Super easy to learn how to use. It's just expensive and it's specific to 10.5, 11 meter rope. It's specific to rope size. Again, I think there's a different size for different rope. So, again, there's been a lot of questions about it. We're going to test it. We're going to pull on it with a lot of force next week and measure the force and see if the rope does slip and what happens to the rope. Maybe the rope, and maybe we'll find out it does break the rope. I have no idea. I don't think it does, and I think it's going to slip and have the built-in fuse, which is super cool. So that's it for this week. I mean, make sure we covered everything. Yep. So just as a reminder, Danger Tate is going to do an interview with Tim Thursday at, I think it's 2 p.m., 10 a.m. I don't know. It's going to be live. I should know this. Look at our YouTube channel to find the time. And we'll put it on the podcast too. The recent accident, always good to look at that report. Thank you all for going through that. I really like the American Whitewater Big Four. Please, get a tattoo of that because it's great information. And this Capto thing, more information is coming soon. Thanks, everybody, for watching this week. And I'm going to set the outro. And we'll see you probably next Tuesday.